Hey, this is season one, episode one of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. I'm Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast to share their stories and talk about what they've learned, and we're here to share that with you. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan. How's it going, Dan?
It's going pretty good. Thanks, Becca. Today we have a really great episode. We're going to hear from Nick Taylor. Nick is a senior software engineer at Forum, the company behind Dev. He's a big fan of TypeScript, JavaScript, React and Preact, and Node. Once upon a time, he was into C# and ASP.NET. Aside from programming, he enjoys hitting the gym, snowboarding, and a long, long time ago, rugby. Nick is also one of our first members. He is been in Virtual Coffee since nearly the beginning. He has helped us out in many ways. He's been a note taker and a room leader, a mentor, an open source maintainer, and an all-around awesome human being. So Nick is going to talk about live streaming and open source, and he will share with us his approach to life, which he calls structured YOLO.
We start every episode of the podcast like we start every Virtual Coffee. We introduce ourselves with our name, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. Today's question is, what is one thing you are afraid of?
We hope you will enjoy this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast.
Hey, I'm Becca. I'm a front-end developer from a small town in Ohio, and one of my biggest fears is waffle bridges.
Hi, I am Dan. I am a front-end developer from Cleveland, Ohio, and one of my biggest fears is hornets.
Ooh, hornets.
Don't like them. Yeah.
My name is Nick Taylor. I'm a senior software engineer at Forum, and I'd say one of my biggest fears is heights. I am not a big fan of heights. I remember in grade 6, I cried at the bottom of the CN Tower because I had a hard time going up, and it was traumatic.
Oh, no.
So you want to know how I ended up?
Yeah. Let's start with your origin story. How'd you get into programming?
I don't know. I feel like it's a classic story of somebody who has no idea what they want to do. I had a computer. Like, we had computers when I was younger. Like, had a VIC 20. I'm a little older, so that's like, I think that was before the Commodore 64 or after. I can't remember the order, but you know. So that was fun as a kid, just doing stuff like printing your name multiple times over the screen and. Eventually got like a clone PC, which seemed to be the big thing in the day in the 80s. Cause like the actual, like, I guess it would have been IBM machines were a lot more expensive and, just didn't really do too much on there. Like my dad's an accountant and financial planner. So he's always like working in spreadsheets and stuff. And we didn't really have any games, so like I was making pie charts in Lotus 1-2-3, and I just thought that was cool on a monochrome monitor. But and then eventually got a couple games there, and like clone Pac-Man, a lot of cloned stuff. But that was kind of like my early introduction to computers. But I honestly was never like a diehard programmer. It was only really once I got to CJEP. CJEP is like, it's like the last 2 years of high school in the States, I guess. We don't have like a grade 12, grade 13. So you go to grade 11 and you can either go straight to university, like if you go out of province or out of country. But if you're in Quebec, you typically need to do these, which is where I'm from. I'm from Montreal. Basically, I ended up bombing my first semester because I was dating somebody and I was just doing that and playing rugby pretty much. And then after failing my first semester, I just kind of got back on track a bit. And I was in creative arts, which at the time there was like literally take any courses you want. And I was always pretty good at math. So I ended up taking Cal 1 and Cal 2 courses, and I took a C++ course. And literally the only reason why I ended up going into computer science, the only reason why I did was like, I did okay in that C++ course, but it wasn't anything special. It's like, I think I remember one of the final exercises was like making a Christmas tree out of stars, you know, and you're just basically repeating it. But yeah, that's really kind of how I got into programming, I guess, which I know that doesn't sound that exciting. But the exciting part for me was there was no web courses at the time. Like, I was in university when it was always just like learn about databases, data structures, operating systems. And there was everything web I literally learned on my own. I remember opening, no joke, notepad.exe in a cracked version of Windows Server 2000, I think, or something. And I just started learning HTML, JavaScript, and CSS through there. And, you know, the computer science background helped, but I probably could have done a lot better in school, but I was doing a lot of sports and stuff too. I was pretty active playing rugby. So, but yeah, that's my boring origin story for getting into programming. It's not like, yeah, I was like hacking the matrix when I was two or something. But but the funny thing is, once I finished school, I felt like I was learning more outside of school. Like, I was actually motivated to learn out of school. When I was in school, I wasn't as motivated. So it's kind of funny in that respect. And then it's pretty much just gone from there. I've been mostly, I'd say about two-thirds of my career has been in the .NET ecosystem. So, well, even before .NET, there was something called ASP, so Active Server Pages. And they even had JScript, which was like Microsoft's version of JavaScript. And there was VBScript, so you could program pages. It's kind of like PHP, kind of. And then .NET came out, and then you ended up with ASP.NET, which, and then, so that's the whole .NET ecosystem. And I basically was in there, yeah, up until about 2016. But I was always a big fan of JavaScript, and I liked the web stuff. And I just happened to be in the .NET ecosystem because that's just where jobs ended up coming from. Like, somebody I knew would say, oh, why don't you come work here now? And but yeah, when I hit 2016, I had this opportunity to, I'd already been doing, kind of more full stack at that point. And I had an opportunity to take a role as a front end dev doing React and TypeScript for this fintech startup. And I haven't looked back since then. Like, I mean, everything pretty much is front end for me now. I have no problem working in back end if I need to, but for now, at least I'm super stoked about working in the front end. And like anything, always lots to learn there still, even if I've been around for a while. So
yeah, I love that. I think that's really great. And I like that, you know, you've been here for a while, but you've done a lot of different things and you have a good understanding of, you know, where you're going and what you're interested in. And I think that, you know, that's really a fun and interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah, I find I've been able slowly over time to figure out what I don't want to do, which is good. So that's
yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah, that's sort of how that sounds familiar to me. I end up doing the same thing. I make more decisions based on, yeah, I don't want to do that than practical, like, okay, this is the thing that I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah.
Served me pretty well too.
Yeah, for sure. And the front end right now, I feel like, I mean, the tech space in general is, well, I guess it's a little different because of the pandemic, but at least what I've seen, like excluding the pandemic for now, like just front end jobs, typically like just like everywhere, everybody's, a lot of them are always asking for React because that's like pretty much the dominant front end framework right now, I would say. But still, like, just lots of opportunity. So I don't know. I feel like I transitioned to doing that at the right time. So.
Yeah. And I love that idea. I know when I was learning, so, you know, I'm a newer programmer, but everybody's like, well, what do you want to do? Like, what do you really like? But nobody says, like, what don't you like? Right. And I think that could be a really great way to kind of narrow it down. It's a different approach to things, but, you know, ideally you find a job that you enjoy doing, and that's what kind of creates longevity and helps you to avoid burnout and that type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, yeah, it's, but I feel like it's honestly only something you can really get with experience, I think, because like, because I've been working in at like, my first real programming job was in 2002. So I've been in the space for like about 18 years now. So it's, you know, if you asked me as a junior, I wouldn't say, you know, this is not what I want to do. My first job, I just took it without asking any questions because I was just happy to get a job. So,
yeah, I think that's great. I know that I really hated React when I was doing it, and that's pretty much all I've done. So I guess that there are times that you find things that you enjoy, even if you initially don't like them. I would love to know how you found out about Virtual Coffee, because I this is how I met you, and I just want to know, like, how did you end up here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think as we all know, 2020 is a dumpster fire for many many reasons, but predominantly the pandemic. And I actually remember, I didn't know you at the time, but. I'm generally pretty active on Twitter, and because I work at Forum, which was previously Dev, I'm usually interacting a lot with, I tend to interact with the community a lot. And I remember, I only saw this in hindsight, but I realized that I was actually responding to some of your questions on Code Newbie at one point. And then I forget when you posted it, but you had your initial tweet that was like, hey, Virtual Coffee, come check it out. And I said yes to the first one, but then something came up. I think I had something for work or something. I had an appointment or something, and so I couldn't make it. And then I think the next one you had, I said, hey, I'm free again. And I just basically contacted you out of the blue. I think I sent you a DM, or I responded directly in the tweet because we weren't following each other at the time. But it's pretty much that, you know. I'm a pretty sociable person, and like outside of, I mean, I'm working full remote now, even pre-pandemic, but you know, I'll go out for drinks, grab coffee with friends, or you know, do stuff. And obviously because of the pandemic, not a lot of that is happening, or none of it is happening. So I was just like, I don't know. I was just like, YOLO, you know, oh, whatever, let's go check it out. And it was one of the best things that happened to me in 2020, honestly. Met a lot of great folks like you, both of you, and just, I really enjoy the community, and it's kind of really cool to see how it's grown. And because we know each other a lot better now too, you know, it's because those initial conversations in the virtual coffee or like the Slack chat, you know, people don't really know how people are. So it's, but you can tell like people know who's who now. So it's, yeah, no, I just love it.
Yeah. I love it too. And who knew that, you know, in April I would lose my job because Dan would fire me, and then
I didn't fire you.
I mean, it's semantics, right? Like, I work for Dan.
It's important semantics.
And Dan was like, hey, we don't have work anymore, so call it what you want. But yeah, like it started there, and it was like, okay, well, I need to be around people. And now we're recording a podcast, right? Like, nowhere in my mind did I ever think that this was going to be where we would be, you know, 8 months later.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a lot of stuff. I mean, the podcast is amazing. We've been doing brown bags. We just did the lightning talks. It was last Thursday, right?
Friday.
Yeah. I think, yeah, Friday, yeah. Yeah, so just lots of stuff going on. And it's, you know, people are always like, hey, let's try this or let's do this. Or, you know, or if somebody brings up something, like, oh, that'd be a good brown bag, you know. So I think it's just been a really cool experience for everybody, you know, like, because it's kind of like almost like a mini Twitter, or it's a mini community basically. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That like size of it is one of my, I don't know. One of the things I like too, that is sort of what everybody kind of knows each other, like you were saying.
Yeah.
It's been cool. It's been cool kind of being around, you know, since it started, you know, seeing it kind of everybody become close, but, you know, grow a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, being able to meet developers, you know, I'm a new developer and I'm a mom of four kids. So it's not like I get out that much, right? Like my kids are young. So people are like, go to meetups and meet people or conferences. And, you know, it's only doable for so many people, right? And that was not something that was doable for me. And so I missed that community a lot. I learned online in a like self-paced program, and there wasn't that community. And so like finding people here at all stages has been such a great way to learn and grow.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing about going to like events and stuff is they're just like, they come and go, you know, and then it's over. I don't know.
Yeah.
And sometimes you make friends, you know, but most of the time not. Right. So they, even if it's a great event, and then when you go home, it's, I don't know, then you're back to your job and stuff. So that's one of the like nice things about this sort of ongoing community.
Yeah, I find it's consistent because like we meet, I mean, for those who don't know, we have two virtual coffees, one on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I typically try to go to both of them. I usually miss a Tuesday one if I have an all hands meeting for work, because I work in a distributed company. So like, because of time zones, we alternate the time of the all hands on the Tuesday, and sometimes it's on Wednesday. But so I think like once every 3 weeks I have to miss a virtual coffee, but I look forward to them, and I feel kind of down when I miss one. It sounds kind of funny. It's like I don't know, like crack cocaine, I don't know.
There have been a couple of times where I thought I was gonna miss, and it was like I'm gonna miss, and then I would like log in from my phone or rush home or whatever. So I've been super excited to make all of them, except this week is Thanksgiving. So I think I will be missing my first one, American Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
But don't worry, the show will go on and we will have a host for everybody. Nick, I want to dig in to a little bit of some of the cool stuff that I think you're doing. You have been really great with our community. We did the Hacktoberfest initiative where we worked with community members to work on Hacktoberfest, where they're trying to get four pull requests into open source projects. And we set up mentorship and we worked with maintainers and the contributors as well. And you pretty much played a role in all three of those things. You contributed to my open source project. And I want to say like, that was really great to have somebody who has a good idea and understanding of what it's like to be an open source maintainer. And so you contributed to my project and at the same time mentored me as a maintainer. And I just want to say, first of all, thank you. And second of all, can you talk a little bit about your experience in open source and the things that you've learned, and maybe some things that contributors and maintainers can kind of learn from?
Yeah, for sure. I got into open source in, it's either 2015, I think it was 2015, maybe 2016, but I think it was like late 2015. I'd never contributed to open source at all at that point. I didn't know Git because I was working in the .NET ecosystem. And at the time, like Microsoft is open source now in terms of the .NET framework and all that. And they use Git heavily now, but prior to that, I was in other source control systems. Like for those who are really old, there was one from Microsoft called Visual Source Safe, which got corrupt all the time. And so like your code base would sometimes just kind of go in the dumpster. But worked in like SVN and then TFS, which is Team Foundation Server from Microsoft. So the first thing that was, the way it happened was, I was like, this was kind of my, I want to really just focus on front end. And I'd started messing around with Meteor. Meteor is like a, it's a universal JavaScript framework. It's changed a bit over the years. For those who are in the React ecosystem, Apollo, like GraphQL, that actually came from Meteor and then some other projects. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to mess around with this. So it was like literally JavaScript everywhere. It was MongoDB for the database. You write code on the front end in JavaScript, obviously, and Node in the back end. And then you could also have certain parts of the code that you could share that could be used server side and client side. So maybe something, for example, like client side validation, you could do it on, well, not just client side validation, you could do it on both sides. So I just started messing around with that. And then, but I really didn't know anything about it. And I forget where I saw this posted. It was on some message board. I really can't remember where. I think it actually might have been, I think Meteor at the time had job boards or like some kind of community board, maybe. I think that's where it came from. Somebody from San Francisco, who I did not know, just said, I have a paying gig for Meteor and it's working in open source. And I just said yes, even though I didn't know it really. This is kind of where my journey of structured YOLO begins. So yeah, I just said yeah, and then I met up with him. We ended up being a team of five people. We were working on this really cool application that was called Push Pickup. So it was web tech, but the idea was to make it a mobile app. And it was like, if you want to play basketball, you can just find friends around you and organize a game. Cause there's several sports platforms now, I think, to do this kind of thing. But this was like, it just seemed like a better way of doing it. And so that was the project. And then I remember like I got some code working and I'm like, okay, first pull request ever. I'm like, I got to make it perfect, all this stuff. And of course it wasn't perfect. I messed something up. And then this is prettier days and ESLint. So then there was a lot of, can you change this formatting and stuff too? So basically it wasn't a disaster, but it was like not great. But you know, continuing on with the structured YOLO, I just kept going and just kept contributing. And then React was out at the time. React came out in 2013, I believe, at the F8 conference, or was it 2015? I can't remember. React was like the hot new thing, and I was like, I need to learn React. So, like I've mentioned to you before, I'm not really good at starting projects. I'm good at jumping onto projects. So I found this React boilerplate project that used Redux. It was called React Slingshot. It still exists, and is by Corey House, who's a React consultant. It depends. Whenever I think people are well known, like a lot of people are like, I have no idea who you're talking about. But he seems to be, he's pretty active in the React ecosystem. He used to do a lot of .NET. He's a Plural site author, all that stuff. So I just started contributing, and I think after my 13th pull request, he's like, oh, hey, do you want to become a maintainer? And small world, this is also how I met Kyle Welch. He's actually a maintainer on there as well. So that was my kind of first kind of deep dive into, post the Meteor project. And it was cool that I was asked to be a maintainer. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to say yes, because I just thought it was interesting. And there was three of us on the project. So this is like kind of one of the first points of like, if you're working in open source, Kent C. Dodds does this very well. He'll create really great projects, but Kent C. Dodds does not scale. Nobody scales like at the level of when people are asking for fixing things and stuff. So typically, at least from what I've seen, Kent will make like a great project, like his most recent one, like the whole testing library stuff. And then he'll, I think typically what he'll do is kind of what I mentioned is people start contributing and he just asks them, hey, do you want to become a maintainer? And then all of a sudden you're scaling because you have all these other maintainers and they're people that are interested in the project because they were most likely contributing to it. So, so that's kind of like story slash also first advice about if you want to create a project that's, you know, if it's your own personal project, you know, maybe that's not something you need right now, but as soon as your thing potentially gets popular or you notice it's starting to pick up steam, I would say it's definitely a good idea to at least ask one of the folks that contribute to your project to become a maintainer. And yeah, that was, there was that. And then there was just little other bits. Like, I wrote a post about this, but like even documentation is important. And I remember in 2016, when I was working at this FinTech, we were working in Electron and I was trying to do something and it wasn't working. And then I realized there was an error in the documentation in Electron. So I started doing like little pull requests, stuff like that.
I want to like just pause for a second, because I think that you just gave us so much great information and I like want to make sure that all of this stuff gets highlighted. One of the things that I find like super inspirational, I love your, structured YOLO.
Structured YOLO.
I coined that last week. I forget what, but
yeah. And that's great. Like I think that's wonderful, because I think for a lot of new developers, or probably like just lots of developers in general, like there's this fear of trying something out and failing, right? Or of, you know, not doing it right. Or like, I remember when I first started working, like my husband is a developer too, and I would type out a message and then I'd be like, can I read this to you? Does it make sense at all? Or like, am I saying the things in the right ways? Right. You know, because you're learning an entirely new vocabulary. But I think that getting over that hump and that fear of not saying it right or not doing the pull request right is like half of the battle to becoming more confident as a developer. And like that attitude of structured YOLO, I think really would benefit. I want your structured YOLO course. So when you drop that, can you let us know and we'll put it out there for everybody?
Yeah, my masterclass, along with Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine's guitar class. Yep, sure, no problem.
Yep, right there. I want it. But I think that that's great. And I think that's really helpful to hear your story about that and to hear like, hey, like you might not have gotten it perfect. But also like you're talking about you're using this open source project and they didn't get it right in the documentation or something changed, right? And I think that also as a new developer, there's this tendency to believe that everything that you see on the screen is the right way of doing things, but sometimes things change. Or sometimes it's not documented right, or you know a better way of doing things. And so, you know, realizing that you have value in where you are at your stage is really important too. And I think that you captured that a lot.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's the other thing. Because all these things are open source, it's like the software is not perfect. Like there's tons of great projects. I don't mean that in a negative way, but like I've ran into issues like with Webpack, for example. It ended up being my fault, but because the code was open source, I was able to literally debug in the Webpack code, because when you install Webpack, it goes in your node modules and it's literally all the source code. So you can actually debug in there. Cause like I had this Webpack loader, for anybody that's familiar with Webpack, and it wasn't doing what it was supposed to. And then because I was able to go in the code and step through, I actually figured out that the configuration options for that loader were wrong. Like I had done something wrong and I probably didn't read the documentation properly. So that's probably my bad too. But I think that's the cool thing about open source, just helping, you know, there's another side to it. There's the whole burnout thing, which is a whole other topic. I personally haven't experienced it because one, where I am now, it's like my job is to work in open source. Like I'm paid to work in open source. So it's not like, you know, when like Sebastian McKenzie, who created Babel, used to be Six to Five, the project, but like it was literally just him initially. And then he abandoned the project because he literally got so burnt out, because it's Babel is like literally in probably any modern front end project. It's everywhere, you know? And so, but that ties into getting more maintainers into your project as well, you know? But at the end of the day too, you know, and I talk about this in my talk, getting the most out of open source that I did for Hacktoberfest is, you know, a lot of people it's, you know, take, or just like, you know, this doesn't work, fix it. Or why isn't this merged yet? It's like people sometimes forget that there's people behind the projects, you know? So you have to, like, one of the things I talk about is like, don't forget, you know, like somebody might be on vacation. They might be sick, you know, like they're doing it on their own time, you know, unless it's a paid project or like some kind of Patreon, or like it's your actual job to be paid to work in open source. So, you know, it's just stuff I think that folks forget sometimes, you know, and like, and one of my favorite things to do is if anybody's ever snarky is you can just say, oh, thanks, you know, would you like to create a pull request or, you know, so you're not, it's kind of like a nice, a funny way to kind of shut down an asshole.
Yeah. I look forward to your pull request.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, but yeah, no, it's,
I think that what you're saying about remembering people are behind, you know, is important. And I feel like another thing that I have like been, I don't know, trying to figure out how to sort of communicate to people is remembering that like just because somebody has been a developer for a long time doesn't mean that they know everything or are better or, you know, like experts or anything, you know what I mean? And so like it's sort of what Becca was saying before, like, you know, just like learning to trust yourself and your judgment, you know, as you and your abilities as you become a more experienced developer, you know, I feel like is one of those like big steps, big important steps, and something that I've been trying to figure out how to help people with, you know, as they start out their career.
For sure, because like a lot of it could just be like from experience, you know certain things because they've happened to you, but like, you know, I'm not really good at animations. But it's because I haven't really had to ever really do them. It's not because I'm horrible at them. It's just I haven't had enough time to really dedicate it to it. But I think what you get better at too is, and Scott, I'm dropping like names here, but like Scott Hanselman gave a great talk at Codeland this year. And he's just talking about, because he's been in the space for like a long, long time. And he was just saying like, you get better, you know, he wasn't saying why I'm better than you, but I can't remember exactly how he said, but he's basically said, I'm older now, I have experience, but I know how to Google better than you, you know? So like, cause it's true. Like half the time, like you'll get an error. It's like, you're going to paste in that error. You're going to go see almost always somebody's had that error. You get the occasional, like, you know, Russian site with one hit where it's like worst. That error and you have no idea, but nothing against Russia. It's just, it's happened to me so many times that it's like one hit on a Russian site. I don't know why, but yeah, no, that's the thing. And nobody's ever going to know everything. Like, you know, it'd be kind of a little presumptuous that you know everything too, you know, like the whole know-it-all thing. It's like, I think your brain would probably explode if you did know everything anyway. So
I think that's why, you know, it's so important to have this community of people that are at, you know, all stages of the journey, right? Because you learn a lot from seeing other people talk about how they don't know something. Or, you know, Molly Struve, I think, tweeted once about bringing new people on board. And one of the things she does is talk about like, okay, this is a thing that I messed up last week or something like that, right? And that just kind of, you know, if you're allowed to admit your failures, I think, and well, okay, so maybe it's not called a failure, right? Like if you're allowed to admit things that didn't go right the first time, then you're better able to learn and grow from that experience. And I think also like your live streaming goes in line with that too, right? Because there's kind of a lot at stake, but I feel like you make things very accessible and you make it friendly to a lot of different people because you're willing to put yourself out there and live stream. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I started live streaming in April this year. Once again, pandemic, 2020 is a dumpster fire. And I was like, I don't know. It kind of ties into Swick's, Sean Wang's like Learn in Public. And it's kind of cool. Actually, I got to interview him a couple weeks ago, which was kind of nice too. But yeah, I just started live streaming mainly, and I was literally doing like my real work. It wasn't like this is my side project. I was doing my actual work live streaming, and my own account on Twitch, I don't have a lot of followers. I've got like 100 something, but I was just talking to myself. Like I found the live streaming helped me articulate, either like rubber ducking the screen basically. And so I'd be talking about my whole thought process and stuff. And then I got the idea, which I don't think is a new idea or anything, but I was like, why don't I try pairing with folks in the community to pair on issues in the forum code base? And so I just sent out a tweet and then spoke to my work, and they said like, that's cool. Go ahead. And this was initially all on my Twitch account. I had done one with Sophia Lee, who's in the community. I did one with Chuck Smith, who's in our virtual coffee, Tanaya Jackson as well. And I think those were the first three I did, and that was still on my own stream. And then this was getting close to Hacktoberfest, and I was actually my main job for the month of Hacktoberfest was to work on Hacktoberfest for dev/forum. So me and Christina Gorton, my other coworker, who's our community manager, I had pitched the idea to Jess, one of the co-founders. I said, well, why don't we do pairing for Hacktoberfest? And then we got some other ideas too. Like, I just thought walk through Wednesdays sounded cool. So then I was like, we'll just start interviewing people. And so like it started off with some of our team members, and I'm still interviewing some of our team members, but also just people in the dev community. And this kind of ties into my structured YOLO. I'm just like, I have nothing to lose. I'm just going to ask people who I would like to interview if they want to come on, and they said yes. So that's kind of cool. So it's like, had like Sean Wang, like I said, recently. Spoke with somebody from the NPM GitHub team last week, Rui Adorno, Eve Porcello of GraphQL fame, React, she's coming on. I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, but Veni Kunche, she runs Diversify Tech, she's coming on, and Gant's coming on, Jerome Hardaway from VetsuCode. So, I don't know, it's just kind of cool, like, and just to be able to do that is kind of fun. But yeah, we did more live coding. And like you said, it's not set up to succeed. Like it's set up to succeed in the sense like, yes, we're going to have fun and stuff, but like the whole goal of the live pairings is, it's not that I'm trying to make it as realistic as possible, but like in real life, like you get an issue, you're going to start looking up stuff. You're going to start trying to figure things out, and you're not necessarily going to figure it out in like an hour and a half, which is typically what we do for the stream. So, you know, I always tell folks at the beginning, you know, like they introduce themselves and stuff, but I stress that we're here to have fun, just get you introduced to the code base, you know, before, after, help them if they're new to open source, to, you know, create a branch, create a pull request, follow up after as well, you know, and there's some prep too, like getting them set up with the code base. And we have some talks as well. I've just really been enjoying it for many reasons. One, it's, I like engaging with the community, and I also like the element of, I don't know if this is going to work or not. And like, I've been even doing some Ruby live code pairing, which I don't really have a lot of experience in. So that's kind of fun too. So that's my structured YOLO kind of in a nutshell. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that that's great for everybody to hear. And I do love how you use like this person-centered approach, I think, like when you're doing this, right? Like you're meeting people as human beings where they're at, and it's not this high-pressure thing, right? It gives everybody the ability to learn and to grow. And I think that's really great.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because like on the live stream, there's chat in Twitch. Like we put them on YouTube after, but so people from the community will actually interact too. Oh, did you try this? Like, do this, you know? So there's, it's pair programming, but kind of like slightly mob programming a bit to the certain degree, depending on the stream, I guess. But Yeah.
That's great. We've got a couple of questions from the virtual coffee community that I want to make sure that I ask. The first one is, can you talk about your funniest bug or your biggest whoops moment? Or maybe that's a time you took down prod.
I didn't take down, well, I guess I somewhat took down prod. I was doing my first deployment at a smaller company in like 2009. And it was my, like I said, my first deployment. This is like pre, there was no real like CI, CD at the time. I was using something called cruisecontrol.net, which is, it's like a task runner, but like a lot of the stuff I'd done custom like stuff. But I was getting ready. I had my checklist. Okay, let's upgrade the database. And like, I don't remember what happened, but like I literally locked the database like the first thing I did. So like basically the entire deploy was botched at that point. And the DBA, the database administrator that I worked with, we'd worked in other places before too. She just kind of laughed and kind of did a tisk tisk, but she's kind of like, yeah, move out of the way. Let me sort this out for you. So, so that there's that. Another place, which was, it wasn't my fault, but it was still a very interesting scenario. I was working at e-commerce company, and we had a client, a fairly large company, so like I think about 40,000, maybe 60,000 folks with single sign-on. And I was working on the project, which was the single sign-on project, and we had this custom single sign-on thing initially, and then we migrated to a off-the-shelf solution because it just made sense. Let people who know, you know, authentication, authorization, let them handle that. So we had our development environment, our test and staging environment, and then production. So got tested it through every part of the process, get to production, and I run it. And all of a sudden the sign-on is in infinite loop. And this is like for any, it's not, it wasn't OAuth for anybody that's familiar with SAML. So it's like WS Federation. It's just a little more complicated, but basically, yeah, the thing was spinning like crazy. And I'm like, we're deploying, these are like, this was a large SharePoint application. And this takes like, the deploys were like a long time. We typically did it from like 5 PM till like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. And it's like 1 a.m, this thing's happening. I'm like, oh my God, you know, checked everything. And like I said, every stage of the process was fine. Dev, test, staging, no issues whatsoever. I get on the phone with their technical support. We're trying to figure it out, you know, and in the end, it turned out that the software had, you can do in C Sharp, you can kind of have conditional stuff like if I'm in debug mode, do something. And there was something that was in one of those like if debug, it was I think it was logging something, and it was preventing this infinite loop from happening. So when we were in development, test, and staging, no issues at all, but production, I think it was like a log or something. And it's because it didn't do that step, like maybe it was like just to prevent like
a race condition.
Yeah. So I think it was preventing a race condition, even though they didn't realize. So we figured that out. So then we had to redeploy, and we redeployed it in debug mode so that the deploy could finish. And then after that, you know, we filed an issue with the company, and then they fixed it, and then everything was fine on the next deploy. But it was just like high stakes at like, you know, and it's like 1 or 2 in the morning, you know, like you just want to go to bed. It was pretty stressful, but got sorted out. So yeah, so those are kind of the two notable ones I can think of.
Yeah, that sounds rough. How about kind of the flip side of this? The other question we have is, what is the most excited you've ever been about a piece of code working?
I think it's working. Well, it was dev at the time, but forum, my first, I don't know. It was cool because I was actually the first external contributor to the dev code base back in 2018. So I've been contributing to the project since 2018, but or was it 2017? Yeah, it was 2018. When I started working there in January, the first thing I did was we overhauled the feed and if you're logged in, because you can personalize it to some degree. And it originally was all server-side rendered, because for those who don't know the forum code base, it's primarily a Ruby on Rails app. And then we sprinkle Preact wherever it makes sense to have interactions, typically in the logged in experience. So I got to do that. And then it just felt really cool knowing that once I shipped like a feature that everybody sees like every day, was in production and, you know, like getting millions of views every month. So that just felt really good. And, you know, it's just been fun. Like anything new I do in there, it's just been a lot of fun. So
seems like a pretty great organization to work with.
I won't lie, it's pretty awesome.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Nick, for being here with us. Can you tell folks what you're working on or where they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm at Nicky T online. Pretty much everywhere, GitHub, Twitter, Dev2, and all that. You can also check out my website, iamdeveloper.com. I have no idea how I was able to snag that domain, but I did. And also live coding, if you want to check that out, you can go to livecoding.ca. I don't know how I got that one either, but and twitch.tv/thepracticaldev for live coding as well. And projects right now, I guess I've been working on a few. Well, for Hacktoberfest, like you said, I had contributed to yours. I've been working with someone who I contributed to last year. I don't remember her full name, but her first name's Ray, and they have a Gatsby plugin for OEmbeds. So I'm a maintainer on there now. So I've been working on there too. So that's fun. And, you know, and then there's my day-to-day, which is an open source, the forum code base. So lots of fun stuff going on in there.
That is awesome. And we will link all of those things in the show notes. Is there any last advice you have for our listeners?
Spiders aren't bad. It's just I have some unnatural fear of them. I don't know why. But they eat bugs. So I have some in the corners of my office, and I know they're there and they're doing good work. So thanks, buddy.
That is excellent. Thank you so much, Nick, for being here with us.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us as we talk to Nick Taylor on this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was edited and produced by Dan Ott. You can check out our show notes for links to things we talked about in the episode and how to contact us or Nick. I'd like to thank the Virtual Coffee community for being awesome as always. We really enjoyed talking about Nick's journey into software, how he found Virtual Coffee, and how open source, live streaming, and YOLO played an important role in his life as an awesome human being. If you have questions or comments for the podcast, you can email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. To find out more about Virtual Coffee, you can check out virtualcoffee.io or come hang out with us on a Tuesday or Thursday. Hope to see you there soon.